Shh. Nope, just shush. Everyone shush. There's just too much around. Too much of what? Noise. That's right. We need to cancel the noise. We need to cancel it right now and put it on a podcast. The Noise Cancelling Podcast. That's where we are right now. And I'm here with three very special guests to tell you all about the week's tech news. Let's start with who got on the call.
Hi, I'm Sherielle Smith, Editor-in-Chief of Laptop Mag.
I'm Andrew Friedman. I'm a Senior Editor on Tom's Hardware.
And I'm James Peckham, Phones Editor for Tech Radar.
And I'm Gareth Beavis, Global Editor-in-Chief of Tech Radar, and accidentally called this podcast a call to start off with. Well done, me. But it is a call, though, because obviously we're being very careful and self-isolating, etc. So we're in four different parts of the globe right now talking over VC. So fingers crossed it all works out for you guys. Please let us know on Twitter or however you want to get in contact with us. We'll let you know at the end how it sounds or if you've got any feedback. How are you guys this week? Cherie, how's it going?
So far, so good. Skies are bright outside. I haven't been outside in God knows when. So, I mean, I have windows.
That's good. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. Lovely to have you. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me. I think a little stir crazy as everybody, but I'm really glad to see all your faces on this call and to hear your voices and to, you know, talk about some cool tech.
And what's your favorite room in the house so far? I feel like everyone's really getting their feet for who's got the best one.
I mean, I live in a one-bedroom New York City apartment, so whichever room I can work in is the favorite at the moment.
And James/Pexy, how about you?
Favorite part of the house so far? Again, I live in a two-bedroom flat in London, so it's not particularly exciting. I've not found any secret passages or anything so far. But yeah, not going entirely mad just yet, but a few more weeks of this, maybe I will.
Yeah, who knows? It's just a fun trip into our own psyches. what more could you want, really? And the good news is that the tech world is still spinning and spinning almost as hard as ever, really. I feel like, while it's obviously a bit strange in the fact that we can't go and see, we talked about this last week, but you know, you can't go and see products, people are showing stuff over VC, it's not really the same as it ever used to be. We are still seeing things coming out. And Cherie, you seem to have been fairly excited this week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you always are.
I mean, I always am. Like, I like to keep a positive outlook on things. But tech news-wise, there are so many embargoes that are breaking, and I am so excited. Intel has news. NVIDIA has news. There's gaming laptops galore coming down the pipe. This is a great week.
Oh, so, I mean, in terms of the news coming through, like, is it actually interesting, or is it just more stuff that only computer geeks will love?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. I mean, if you're a gamer and you're a PC gamer, you're definitely going to be excited. Intel is finally releasing its H-series chips for gaming laptops. So if you are familiar, even if you aren't, the H-series chips are what let you play games. It helps let you play games on those shiny, fancy Alienwares, those Asus Zephyrus, all those gaming PCs. And with the H series, particularly with the HK series, it allows you to overclock. So you can squeeze every little bit of performance out of that mamma jamma. NVIDIA has finally revealed its not-so-secret news that super GPUs or graphics cards are coming to fruition as well. So basically what it means is that gaming PCs in terms of laptops are about to get way, way more powerful.
And Andrew, does this actually matter to you? Are you excited about it as well, or is Cherie just generally enthusiastic about life and it's spilling into Intel news?
I mean, honestly, in these dark times, I will take Cherie's enthusiasm every day of the week. But I mean, it does matter. We're going to see probably every major laptop maker refresh their designs. And, you know, some of them are just going to put new parts in it and call it a day. Other ones are really, like, they're innovating. They're going to put in faster screens, so your games are going to look smoother when you play them. It also means if you're, you know, maybe you're not a gamer, but you use a gaming laptop because you want that power to be editing video or editing photos or editing audio. And for that, you know, newer parts means, you know, more performance. So it's great for a bigger audience, even than just gamers.
I mean, we talked last week a lot about PS5, Xbox Series X and stuff. I mean, do you think this is the kind of stuff that might actually start enticing people over and start buying a proper gaming PC or laptop?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if the people who haven't been following PCs before are going to see this and have their mind explode. I think a lot of those announcements and a lot of those comparisons will come on whatever comes out later this year and closer to the release of the consoles. I think there's going to be a lot more this year that we don't know yet about on the desktop side, that not on the laptops, that's really more comparable to console gamers. But I think for a lot of people, there's just going to be a lot more choice, and that's really exciting.
And Pexy, you enjoy Animal Crossing, so I guess that makes you a gamer, right? you're obviously... you're big in the console space. Would you ever go to become a PC gamer, or is it just not your bag?
It's such a big stepping stone for me. Like I love the fact that I can just sit on my sofa and turn on a console in that way. That's really it for me personally. I don't see myself doing it. But then there are so many titles and stuff. Like we're even just looking at one of the Humble Bundles a minute ago, that you can get so many games for £25 or $25 that you just never would see on consoles. This is like 20 games or something for this coronavirus Humble Bundle. So maybe that'd be the one thing that would tempt me, but otherwise I just want to be able to sit on my sofa really and play on my PlayStation or play on my Switch.
So it's actually just the location that matters. Is that a huge part of it?
It is, and just actually having one system that I know everything will work with, just like having it, knowing that I can buy one box and be like, this will work, that to me is just as important.
Cherie, I mean, you've got literally every gadget under the sun, right, in that apartment?
I believe in being gaming agnostic. Number one, I'm a tech hoarder, so my boyfriend can attest that he's always like, why do we need two PlayStations? Why do we need four? Why do we need three Xboxes? Because
I'm with
there.
Him. Why do you need three Xboxes?
Yeah. Answer the question, Cherie.
This is not a podcast. It's an intervention.
It is not an intervention because I have one in the living room, I have one in the bedroom, and I have one downstairs in my office for testing purposes. Like, that is why. And you can, and like, you, it's like tech
you,
is,
you can move them. You can move them from place to place.
I don't want to do that. I want to just be able to go throughout my house and just pick up wherever I leave off and go about my merry way. And I'm a collector of sorts. I've owned every system since I've been born, from the NES to now. Like, I've had a TurboGrafx, I've had a Neo Geo, like we've had a Sega Saturn. Like, I have a sibling, so we would just divvy it up. Like, and so it, like, I just, tech is like shoes, you just can't have one pair.
I mean, it's the way you made it sound, like you said you had a Neo Geo, you had a Sega Saturn, you had a sibling, and all three were comparable in terms of what was,
I mean,
like, they were consoles to you, like you can play on all of them.
In terms of offline interaction, my brother is the more intriguing out of the three.
He'll be so pleased to know that, like, he's better than just a box that's not turned on.
PS5 or to be able to see your brother
my
again?
My brother, like I love my brother. Like, he is the light of my life, and like, he has two beautiful kids that I am eager to see very soon.
Okay, well, what about three PS5s for free? How about that?
Oh, see, come on, man, why are you doing that? now you're making hard decisions. I'm kidding.
There's your
kidding.
Answer.
Right. So obviously, as we said, we're all stuck inside. I don't know about you guys, but fitness has become like a really key thing for me. Like, my 1 hour of exercise outside the day has become massive. Fitbit seems to agree. They've launched another fitness band, and it's the Fitbit Charge 4. I don't know about you guys, but every year I get multiple family members asking, should I buy the Charge for blah, blah, blah for Christmas? So it's good to see the Charge 4 turning up. And this one has got quite a lot of extra features that we've been waiting for. So we've got GPS, there's Fitbit Pay in there, slightly longer battery life, etc. However, for me, it's still £129. It's still quite a lot of money in terms of a fitness band. You know, I'm just looking at the specs right now. I got it wrong completely because I looked at the wrong bit. It's $150 and £130. There we go. And it's a sleep device, and it's the same thing as a fitness band. But I still can't understand, you know, why you'd want a fitness band for a long time, because they last for 6 months maybe, where you sort of like, yeah, it's fun to track my steps, track my minutes, you know, my fit burn zones, whatever. But after a while, you just get bored. I mean, do you guys all use fitness trackers? What do you have on your wrists right now? Cherie, start us off.
I want to invest in one, especially now that I am using that Bowflex religiously, and my boyfriend has started using me as his guinea pig as he applies for an online fitness instructor position. So I am aching all over because I am extremely out of shape. So we just did abs and arms yesterday. Everything is screaming.
So, but you haven't got a fitness tracker?
I have not. And I feel like I really want one, because if I'm in this much pain, I want to be able to see what I did, like the calories burned and all of that stuff, to make it worthwhile. Right now, it's just like, oh, well, I'm just letting the satisfaction of a job well done carry me through the day. That's not enough. I need physical data.
And Pexi, you've been wearable Zeta for Tech Radar previously. Now your phones as well. Like, you've done a lot of Fitbit tracking in terms of both on your wrist and in real life of the company. Like, what do you think? Is this the right time to launch a fitness band, or is it just a bit crazy? What?
Sort of terrible timing, really, isn't it? Yeah, this is something like at the moment is a terrible time, but also as you say, like everyone is going outside for exercise and that's all they're really allowed to go outside for, depending on where you're living. That's essentially the case in the UK. It's kind of mad that this is only the fourth charge device from Fitbit, considering it's essentially their biggest selling product. Or one of their biggest selling products anyway. This seems like a really big step up, I think, like in terms of GPS being on there, that's a really big thing. But as you say, it's £130 still. You can buy fitness bands with GPS features for about £40, $50, that kind of price. You are just buying for that Fitbit name. You do get usually a far superior app experience. You get access to all of the Fitbit premium stuff, all of that kind of thing, all under one roof. But yeah, it's still a really expensive product, really.
I've been, you know, I run every day anyway, and so it's been weird to see like how many people are suddenly going outside. Before it was like, it's sort of like by the fact you're allowed to, everyone's just suddenly started to exercise, which is a great thing. It's keeping people healthy and stuff. But when you're trying to socially distance yourself on a run, I'm just basically running in traffic and hoping for the best right now, which I don't feel like is making me any healthier.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't wait till this is all over to like when there's a run on the gyms, release the Fitbit, make it part of your gym, make it part of a deal, you know, like join a gym, get the Fitbit, really sell them out there. I think that might work. I mean, I've gone through a few Fitbits and I always kind of gave up on them for reasons I think Gareth kind of described. It's like, I kind of got bored. I kind of felt guilty. So I got rid of those. I did by getting into a smartwatch. I got the Apple Watch Series 5 late last year. And now I have other reasons to keep it on. It sends me my texts. It gives me notifications. So now it still makes me feel guilty. My rings have not closed in the last month. I am getting other functionality out of it. So I think every time they add a little more functionality to the tape, no matter which brand it is, then it gives you a little bit of a reason to keep it on.
Yeah, I've never really said enjoyed fitness trackers because GPS smartwatches, Garmin's and you know, Suunto's and Timex and all this kind of stuff, they've done really good things. One of the key things for the new Fitbit Charge, which people will probably see later on when they're being forced to buy them for family members, is the fact that they have this active burn minutes thing, I think it's called. And that means that you can... Sorry, I'm just trying to find out what it's exactly called because I should know these things, but I keep forgetting. And basically that means asking you to spend time in different like heart rate zones. So spending a certain amount of time in, you know, just rest is obviously what we do. And then a bit more in active, then really high active is what, you know, Fitbit wants to see people doing more of, so it can monitor to make sure that you are properly staying well active. But I'm with you, Andrew. Like the Apple Watch, for instance, is a much better device in that sense because it keeps it. You've got that data there ticking past, and you don't mean to have it, but you're using it to, like, you know, get your messages and to do other things as well. And when you do get fit again, or you decide to start doing it, you've got all that historical data there. You don't just take it off like the Fitbit and go, "Oh, I can't be bothered anymore. I'll put it in a drawer and I'll get back to it later," and then you never do. It just makes much more sense to have it as an always-on device. And Garmin and stuff like that. I wear a Garmin all the time because it does sleep tracking and stress tracking, and plus it sends me my messages. It does everything an Apple Watch does, but is also really, really powerful as a running watch. So I find that's a much better way. And Fitbit, putting like a monochrome screen on a thin band, I feel like, is that time nearly up? Who knows? But we'll see. Maybe this will be really popular, and it has got a lot of the really key features. Right. We have been going for a good amount of time on this couple of news stories, so thanks for insight so far. Cherie, where are we going to go next? You tell us.
We could go to reviews. We could talk about Half-Life Alyx. There's a lot of things to talk about.
I feel we should go into the labs. Sing us in.
It's time for reviews. Join us in our labs. Smartphone fitness trackers, laptops, and desktops. Reviews.
That was oddly sedate for you. So that's a good point, though. What is in our labs this week, Cherie? Last week you teased us with the Dell XPS 13 chat. This week you've been testing it. Any insights? Any cheeky updates?
It has been very hard for me to find actual cons with this laptop. Dell has gone up, like, you're not going to see really big improvements. It's really a practice and small tweaks that make a big difference. So, case in point, the actual chassis is 2% smaller than its predecessor. The touchpad is 17% larger. The screen, I think, is about 9% larger. And the biggest change, they finally done it. They've gotten rid of the fourth bezel. So the thing is virtually bezel-less on all four sides. It's powerful. It's got a 10th gen Core i7. We got over 12 hours of battery life. It's got a speedy SSD. Like, I guess if I have to say one thing wrong with it, I think that the keyboard could be a little clickier. And so that, like, that is a very, very minor detail for a laptop. And maybe, okay, maybe the display could be a bit more vivid. Those are the only things I can really fault it for at this point. Like, it's standing toe-to-toe with the likes of the MacBook Pro, the HP Spectre X360, the MSI Prestige 14. It's really holding its own. So this, I mean, for me, Dell is firmly holding on to its king of ultra portables with the XPS 13. I think, Andrew, I think you've been playing with it, or someone's been playing with it on your team.
You sound like you're accusing him of that. Like, someone's been playing with it, Andrew. Someone's been
I haven't been the one doing the review, but it has been going around the Tom's Hardware team, and it's a really pretty machine. It's absolutely an exercise in refinement. There are a few cons depending on what you're looking for. If you just need something super portable that looks really good, that performs, this is for you, period. If you need some of those other ports, this doesn't have a lot of legacy ports, right? You go a few millimeters thicker, like an HP Spectre X360, you'll get USB Type A, which is the rectangular port that you're more used to, the ones you see on the back of airplane seats that all of your current hard drives still work with. So if you can go for a few millimeters thicker, you might get those, which, you know, is nice. Also, Intel has two different processor lines running around right now. And this is the one, and the one in the newest XPS 13 is the weaker of the two. Again, for most people, it's probably going to be fine. But for people who are, you know, for people who are doing like really intense workloads, people who might be editing video on this thing, you might want to go to something with the more powerful.
And so, I mean, two questions come up to me straight away. I haven't obviously used it. I haven't even seen it because I haven't had a chance to look in our labs as we normally do. But number one, why are laptop manufacturers getting rid of so many ports? And number two, if there's no bezel, where's the webcam? Please don't say it's somewhere weird.
Oh, no, the webcam, like Dell did, like after several iterations of us dubbing it the nose cam, Dell actually went back to the lab and they made their own webcam. Dell actually has one of the smallest internal webcams in the business in the XPS 13. So it is right smack dab where it's supposed to be. It's a webcam. It's fairly decent. Like, it's a little grainy, but the colors are, they're fine. It's a webcam.
And they added Windows Hello so you can sign in with your face.
And do we want to do that?
I mean, some people might want to do it. I prefer the fingerprint scanner and the power button myself, but you know.
I like signing in with my face. Feels like the future.
I'd like to see like a full body, like you have to take all your clothes off and just stand in front of it completely vulnerable for it to believe that it's you.
No, thank you.
I mean, you know, at least it makes it sure you really care about actually logging in. That's what matters. And on the second point, why are manufacturers getting rid of these ports? Like phone guys have done it for so long and they've said it's to do with space. It's annoying. I mean, is it the same for laptops?
I think it's more about portability. Like if you want something that you could just throw in a laptop, I mean, throw in a book bag or a purse, then the lighter the better. So in order to shave those millimeters off, you have to sacrifice something. So that sacrifice is going to be the ports. If you want all your legacy ports, then you're going to go with something a little thicker. I think with ultra portables, they're really targeting mobile professionals and people that don't necessarily use a mouse or need an external hard drive. And if you do, I mean, there is the dongle life for you. I personally don't like the dongle life, but it's a choice if need be.
Dell does include a dongle in the box, which is nice. They see that issue. I think probably go for something a little millimeter thicker, but there are options for people who need those things. If you can't get everything, if you need those and you need something with more power, those exist and they have the ports you need. Gaming laptops have them, creative laptops have them, and even a lot of ultra portables still are willing to go a little bit thicker to get them. Like for instance, Microsoft Surface still has them, HP Spectre still has them, so they're there.
So I've got two laptop experts right here. Is the Dell XPS too expensive, or is that how much people should be spending? Also, how much is it? That's also a key part.
It starts at $1,249. The version I'm reviewing is $1,749. I always want more power, so I would go either Core i5 or Core i7. I would prefer Core i7, so the $1,749 is the sweet spot for me. I'm not sure. Like, I'm hoping that they'll at least do a Core i3 version so they can hit that $999 mark.
Is that too expensive, though? That's the key thing. Like, you're saying you want it more, but for the average person?
The average person tends to, from research that I was told a while ago, I don't know if it's still relevant, the average person spends between $500 to $800 on a laptop at most. When we start moving into $1,000 and things of that nature, you're talking about power movers, power users, and business users and creatives and people that really have specified needs for their laptops.
That $999 price point is really important to them. They like to be able to say it starts under $1,000. That usually means they've made some sacrifices. It might mean there's only 4 gigabytes of RAM, which can mean you can't run as many programs at a time. At this point, it doesn't exist. I don't know this for sure, but I'd imagine some of that has to do with the current coronavirus situation, which has closed down factories. It's possible that they only have so many configurations running because they only have so many available. $999 for some people, you know, they want to say they got the premium one, even if it meant they cut down on specs, you still get something that looks really nice. And it's not just what on the inside that matters. But for people, you can get something more powerful for less, but you know, you're giving up on a lot of portability and a lot of build quality.
So Pexi, if I was to give you $1,000, what would you spend it on? If I had to choose, you could choose between a Dell XPS or a possible PS5.
Possible PS5, really, because I'll get half that money back, because essentially we're thinking the prices that it's going to be around $500, we think, at the moment. So do I get to keep that $500 left over? Or are you going to take that back?
Andrew's going to menace you for it back, and he's going to spend it on more ports.
I don't know what ports are on the PS5 yet. PS5 has all the ports I'll ever want.
No one does yet, do they? Sadly, no one really knows yet.
The problem we've got, though, right now, is that we don't know how much the PS5 is going to cost, and we're seeing some ridiculous amounts of information coming out right now. So on the one hand, you've got, and this is the problem we've got in terms of leaks about price. So often you'll see retailers, you know, we see it with phones, we see it with laptops, we see it lots of different tech, where a retailer will get an early vibe and it'll put it on a pre-order and everyone will be like, right, we found out what the price is. In the case of the PS5, there was a Danish retailer, Fotex, who knows how you pronounce that, listing the PS5 for a pre-order price of around $1,000, which is crazy, absolutely crazy. And obviously that's the kind of thing that makes all PS fans go, shit, what am I going to do? Like, that's way too much for me. And it's going to be, you know, nearly three times the cost of the original PlayStation 4. However, you then go to Canada the next day and a retailer, Play and Trade, said it's only going to cost $396 according to their pre-order. And it's like, well, what is the point in even doing this? Because all it does is it creates a real confusion for consumers to not know how much they're actually going to have to save up for it. And, you know, why do this? Why do retailers put this stuff out before it's even been officially announced?
Because they want your money. They need your money now. Point blank, period. They need you to put the money down now, especially with this current situation going on. They need the cash flow. So they're going to try to divide what the price is. Like, I think it's going to be $400 to $500 this time around. If it's lower, that's amazing. I just don't think it's going to be lower. I can't see them going higher because, end of the day, they're targeting parents, in my opinion. Like, so parents, when holiday season comes around, they're going to bulk if a console is $1,000. That's not happening. And Sony would rather sell at a loss out of the gate and know that they're going to recoup it over the lifespan of the console than just scare off potential consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like people do say, like, well, this costs more than the original PlayStation 4, but that was years ago. And, you know, money does go up. Like, you know, inflation is a thing, you know, like to see it maybe go $500 would be a fair price. But this really irritates me when these leaks come out, because it just gets reported as fact and this is how much it's going to cost. And like I said, it just upsets people or gets them excited for no reason to think they're going to get a PlayStation for like 12 quid or something. Andrew, what about you? Which console do you have? Or are you a pure PC gamer only?
No, I mean, right now, I've got a PlayStation 4, I've got a Switch, and I've got the PC. And I'm of the opinion you can kind of interchange a PC and an Xbox, especially now that you've got Xbox Game Pass. That will let you basically get any of Microsoft's games, as well as a number of other, like anything that wasn't exclusive on Xbox is now also on PC. So if you have one and having the other, it's great. And look, I love the PlayStation, has amazing exclusives I can't get on my PC. I love the Switch. James is a real gamer because he loves Animal Crossing, because I am playing Animal Crossing. For a PS5, I mean, based on the specs they're discussing, which seems like it'll be a maybe mid-tier gaming PC come this summer, I think 500 would not be crazy. I'm not sure they're going to do it for 400, but also they're going to be releasing it in a rough economy. So if they do release it this year, if they can, however cheap they can get, it's really going to matter.
And one of the things that's been is also news about the PS5 as well this week is about the fact that it wants to be like Netflix in terms of instant loading for games and stuff. I mean, I can't believe we've got to 2020 and that's not a thing already. Like, the amount of time stuff takes is just crazy, right?
It sort of is, though. Like, I'm playing PS Now at the moment.
You're on a podcast. What are you doing?
Because I'm... yeah, sorry. That's why I've been so quiet for so long. Essentially, like, I'm playing, I'm so current, I'm playing Doom 2016 on my PlayStation at the moment. But so I'm playing that with PS Now, and that does take a little while to load up, but I've not got any of that game downloaded to my console. So all of that is streaming. It's not as instant as Netflix. It's not loading up as soon as an episode of The Witcher does or whatever, but it's almost there. And that's on, like, relatively okay internet, not amazing internet. I know that's not something that everyone can get, but... yeah, I feel like it's almost there, and this next step up in the next few years, I think we will get to the point where streams load immediately like that.
And the other big thing they have going for it, that they seem to be putting a lot of attention into the storage. Like, so if you download the game to your own system, up until now, every system has been shipping with like the clunky old hard drive that you got in your laptop 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And now that they're moving to much faster solid state drive or SSD storage, which, like, these are in PCs like years ago, so... it's really catching up, but it will make a huge difference for your loading times. Just this change in the type of storage. Like, they were showing, I think they've been showing a lot of Spider-Man for PlayStation 4 using it. But, like, the idea that, oh, okay, you won't have to, like, I love watching Spider-Man on the subway during quick loading times. I think it's hilarious for quick travel. But the idea that they could zoom in and out and, like, now you're in the next part of your game is great. And the idea of what Xbox is talking about being able to suspend and load games really fast, all due to new storage technology, is going to be super helpful, even if you're not streaming, even if you just downloaded it. That's really cool.
Either way, I am looking forward to doing several articles on the best SSDs that you can use to put in your Xbox or PlayStation.
Are you actually looking forward to that?
The Xbox one's interesting because they look like they're going with like little proprietary memory cards, which is like very...
I hope they don't do that. Like, Sony did that with the PS Vita, and look where we are now. No Vita.
And then, obviously, while Sony said that, well, you're going to be able to go to Amazon or Newegg and buy some of these SSDs off the shelf if you want, but we're going to have to tell you which ones fit in the system, we don't know yet. So, we'll see, but we'll see how those work.
Right, we do have to move on, but Andrew, quickly, tell us what's been in your labs this week, and by labs, I may mean your bathroom.
No, it's right next to me. Earlier this week, we finally got to talk about the ASUS ROG Zephyrus G14, and that's a little different from all the Intel and NVIDIA news we had, in that this was AMD news. So AMD has its latest series of chips. They're calling it the Ryzen 4000 series. And in a way, there are people saying they've sort of leapfrogged Intel here. They've got smaller chips, and what that means is some better battery life. We got great battery life out of this for a gaming machine. On our test, we have got like 10 hours on it, and I want to run it again just to like sanity check myself. But we've been getting great performance for what's basically a fairly affordable price for a gaming PC. It has a nice keyboard, a nice display. It used to be when you went to go get, whether it's a gaming laptop or a regular laptop with an AMD chip in it, it meant they were giving up some, that something was crappy. In this case, that's really not the case. The screen is nice. The speakers are nice. The keyboard is nice. It feels nice to use. It runs a little warm at times. Like, the fans tend to whir even on the desktop, and it doesn't have a webcam at all. But for a lot of people, this will be a really solid mid-range gaming PC.
And how much is it?
This one, as tested, I want to say, yeah, I think this one's about $1,500. It goes lower to start, and that's for like the mid-range. This one has the RTX 2060 Max Q. Like, that's not bad for this price right now. Obviously, we'll see what happens with all of the new news with the new NVIDIA GPUs, if that shifts price in the ecosystem. But for now, it's pretty good, and you're getting a nice AMD laptop for like one of the first times.
I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're trying to pretend you're live checking, but I'm pretty sure you've got it on paper and you're just tapping on the side just to make sure it sounds like you're doing keyboard stuff so that it's...
No, okay, so it starts at $1,049.99 US dollars, and then we tested it at $1,450 US dollars.
Right, Cherie, you know what time it is now. Where are we going next?
It's unpopular opinions time. Unpopular opinions, let the hate unfurl. Hot takes are welcome. Let that hatred out. Unpopular opinions.
Andrew, take it away.
Sure. So we were talking Xbox.
I want you to sing. I wanted you to sing. Okay.
Do the next verse.
Yeah. I'm gonna leave that to Sheree. We're short on time for me singing, I think, right? I'm seeing the producers, they're telling me to move on.
Sorry, you were saying, Andrew.
Sure. So we were talking about Xbox, PlayStation 5, and we were talking about them in terms of like, oh, we, you know, hate saying that, oh, we know what the price is. What's been on my mind is like, why are we comparing the specs so much again on paper? And I had a colleague who did a pretty good job doing what he can, but I still think we don't know enough about features to easily say, oh, this is definitely better than the other. And we keep saying like on paper, oh, this one has more, you know, a slightly faster processor. This one has a slightly faster GPU. And that may be true on paper, but this is all going to come down to what developers can do with the system. We don't know what that is yet. We don't even know what games are going to be available for most systems. And frankly, the games are probably going to target the less powerful system anyway. If you're a game developer and you're making your game and you want people on PlayStation to be able to play it and people on Xbox to be able to play it, you're probably going to kind of target the less powerful one anyway. Every time that you see like features on an individual console that they say, like, oh, this is just for us, they kind of go by the wayside. The PS4 has a touchpad in the controller, and how many games use that touchpad? I don't know. Maybe that aren't made by Sony itself. Maybe three. So we don't know enough to say which is better. Competing on specs on paper are great. Look, I write for Tom's Hardware. We love specs. It's fascinating to see who's been able to squeeze what out of their partnerships with AMD for this. But we still really don't know enough about how these systems are going to run to say this far out, this one's better, this one's better. I love a good console war. I grew up during them. But I think we got to like cool our jets on that for a bit and like still like wait for more information. We still got 3/4 of a year before these come out. Let's cool our jets.
And going from one into the other, I mean, Cherie, you've often said, I mean, we know you hate tablets. You don't believe in them. We know you don't like Chromebooks. And you're pretty pissed about Samsung right now, right?
I wish that, because Lord knows, that Chromebook that they have coming out, oh, it's beautiful. It's Fire Engine Red. It's got a 4K display, but it's running Chrome OS, and it's just a waste. It's a waste. Like, that could be a Windows 10 or whatever Microsoft is going to pull out its bum this year. Like, it could be a Windows machine, and it should be a Windows machine. Who needs 4K on Chrome OS? What are you doing that you need 4K on Chrome OS? I just can't see it. And it's so pretty. It hurts me. It makes me want to bring back my dear Samsung letter. Like, a couple years ago, I wrote Samsung this letter in response to Best and Worst Brands. Like, dear Samsung, why don't you want to win? Like, this laptop has a lot of win going for it aesthetically. And I can't remember the specs off the top of my head, but I know that it probably has a lot of win going on the interior as well. But it's a Chromebook. There's only so much you can do with it.
So what can you do with a Windows PC and a 4K display that just doesn't work the same on a Chromebook? What's it missing?
Video editing, photo editing. Like, I just don't like the idea of confinement. And Chrome OS to me is still a little too confined with what it can and can't do.
Is there not a place for it, like, if you want to be able to watch 4K films and that kind of thing? Because it's not really something that's available. I know you don't believe in tablets, but, like, there's no real option out there at the moment to be able to do that on a tablet. Is that not who they're trying to target with this?
I don't know who they're trying to target. It's just like,
do they know?
I just feel like this could have been the end. Maybe it's the launching point for them to go back to the notebook series that they had, which used to be a really high-end series that I was very much a fan of, and they just let it go to the wayside. Maybe this is the jumping off point and they'll release a Windows version. I'm really hoping for that, because something that fire should not just be confined to Chrome. Everyone should have a chance to get their hands on that beautiful, slim 4K laptop.
But
come on, you hater, what?
I mean, look, I don't hate Chromebooks the way you do. For certain people, not this one, but for certain people, they're affordable and they're easy to use, and that's great. I think James kind of has nails on the head. 4K is really for people watching video. And clearly not creating it. I mean, sure, you could use an Android app, I guess, to edit video, but those still don't work amazing. But there's clearly been, there have been enough expensive Chromebooks coming out that people are clearly willing to spend the money on it. That, like, even if they're getting a more limited OS that is, you know, still needs some work, that they want something premium that feels nice, like a top end Windows device or a Mac. And so I totally get why that's coming out, because you can't have, you know, Google's Pixelbooks being the only nice ones there. I'd love to see a Windows one like it too, but, you know, the Chromebook ecosystem is growing really popular. They're using them in schools. People are coming out of college. It's the only laptop they've ever owned. So I understand people want one that's really nice. And if that one is coming from Samsung and it's Fire Engine Red and it looks great, like, I get why people might want to spend money on that.
Right. On that note, everyone, thank you very much for being here with this episode of Noise Cancelling. I should say which episode number it is, but I've forgotten. I'm going to guess at 5. Pexy's nodding because he actually pays attention to the admin. Thank you for that.
That's why I'm here.
Right. So all that remains to be said is thank you from me, Gareth Beavis. Cherie?
Thank you. And if you want more content from Laptop Mag, I know you do. Of course, go to Laptop Mag. We're also on Twitter and Facebook at Laptop Mag. And my Twitter is Miss Smith 11, M-I-S-S Smith 11.
I was going to say, like, you didn't give the full URL of Laptop Mag, but I'm like, I think people can work out how to use internet now.
I don't want to do the HTTP. I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want you to do that either. We haven't got much time. Andrew, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. If you want more from Tom's Hardware, we're at https://tomshardware.com. We're on Twitter at Tom's Hardware. You can find us by looking us up on Facebook as well. We're on Instagram at toms.hardware. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at FriedmanAE. That's FriedmanAE.
Pexy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again. I'm at JamesRWP on Twitter, and you can find TechRadar by going to Google and writing TechRadar.
Yeah, and often you'll get to TechRadar, that's how it works. You'll also find all the socials there as well. It just remains for me to say thank you again for listening. We do appreciate all of you guys tuning in every week. Please rate us as 5 stars if you think it's worth it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. TechRadar is obviously very proud to be part of Noise Cancelling. No one's going to applaud. Fine, thanks. Noise Cancelling is an Audio Boom's original podcast, so please check out other options there, because there are a lot of great pods to listen to, especially right now when people are looking for things to do. Thanks, everyone, and I will see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.